America Weekend.
Welcome back to America Weekend. I'm Ed Kalenge. Our next guest is an Emmy Award-winning contributor to CBS News Sunday Morning and a panelist on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Her new book, Approval Junkie, Adventures in Caring Too Much, is available now. It is great to say hello to Faith Saley. Faith, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ed. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, it is great to have you on. Now, Approval Junkie, we know that as a society, we are consumed with how others view us. Tell us why this has become such a quest for you, and tell us how the book came about.
You know, I think you're right about that. I think we are obsessed with the way that others view us. That's, you know, clearly obvious from social media. But I also think that right now, as a society, people are very proud to say that they don't care what other people think, including, you know, at least one notable presidential candidate.
Gee, I wonder who.
And of course, the irony is that elections are won and lost by approval ratings.
Sure.
And I would also say that the people who, you know, the Kanye Wests of the world, the people who, you know, sort of articulate the loudest that they don't give crap what people think, or the ones who are addicted to their Twitters and are tweeting back at any kind of critical, you know, message coming their way. So I think that there is, you know, kind of a disconnection between how much people claim that they don't care and how much we all really care. And I, you know, this book, my book, it's a bunch of essays about my own evolving relationship with approval in my life. And so it's not prescriptive. It's not telling people how they can stop caring what others think, because I don't necessarily think that seeking approval is a bad thing. I think what you want to figure out is why you're seeking approval, for what, and from whom is it worth it. So that's, you know, that's why I wanted to write a little bit of an apologia for approval. I think it's such a fundamental human need to seek validation and to want to be loved and heard and understood. And I also think, at least in my life, some of the things that I've done in the name of feeling validated and getting approbation are the most meaningful or embarrassing or dramatic things that I've ever done. So those were the stories worth telling.
As the world has evolved and we become so involved with our social media, and it's almost as if we've created this now insatiable need for approval. Because think about when you put something on Facebook, you're putting it there so you'll get likes, and now you can get hearts and everything else. And it's almost right. People will put something down, but then they'll go back to Facebook 7, 8, 9 times in the next hour to see how many people liked what I put there. Because if they don't like it, I'm not getting approval. So my question is, are we looking for approval pretty much in insignificant ways now, and maybe we should focus that energy on getting approval from the people and the sources where it would mean more to us?
Yeah, that's a great point. I honestly, you should write a book.
Thank you.
Write my next book, because, or you can write the afterword, because, you know, I think you're exactly right. It never occurred to me. Like, you're right. What if, how many people would be addicted to Facebook or Twitter or Instagram if all you could do was post your thoughts or your pictures, but there was no loop of feedback?
None. Absolutely none.
I don't think people would care. It would be basically like writing in your diary.
Exactly.
Right?
It's like there'd be no horse racing if you couldn't bet on the races. It's the same idea. Yeah. Yes.
And you know, I host a show on PBS called Science Goes to the Movies, and my co-host is a neuroscientist, and she's always reminding me in any experience what's happening in your brain. And of course, in your brain, every time you check to see if you're having any response, and that even includes critical ones, right? Because critical ones say, oh, I matter. People care enough to hate me. Your brain gets like tiny hits of dopamine.
As males and females, do we seek approval differently? And if so, do we seek it from different sources?
Well, I'd like you to answer half that question.
Okay.
I do think that, speaking as a woman, I do think that women have so many more, I mean, look, we live in this great society where we have so many more choices now. You know, how far do we lean in? Do we work or do we not work? You know, heels or flats. But these are choices that also mean that there are many more ways to be approved of or disapproved of in society. I think women put themselves up on pedestals to, you know, receive marriage proposals or tiaras, far more than men do. And, I think, I think we're also judged superficially more often than men. I would say the exception is I did a wonderful book club with my book with about 40 amazing-looking gay men, and they were all like, "We get it. We think we think that gay men, we hold ourselves to a higher standard, at least superficially, mm-hmm. than most straight guys." I mean, don't you think, Ed, that you don't see a lot of gay men walking around with dad bod?
Exactly. You don't. You right.
What do you think as a I'm making a presumption here, as
yes.
a straight guy, what
yes.
do you think about how men and women seek approval?
I think men tend to seek approval in a way that doesn't mean as much. I mean, I think that women are better grounded. I think they have a better mm-hmm. understanding of relationships. I just do. I think they are just more, and I'm not going to use this in a bad way, emotional. I think emotional mm-hmm. in a good way, because they understand what matters most. I will look for, not me per se, but men will look for approval in superficial ways. My beer belly is gone or whatever, or you know what, I can still go out and play softball when I'm 50 years old. I think that it means more for a woman to garner approval from those people that mean most and that are closest to her. Her best friends from high
yeah.
school that she's still in touch with. Her children, her spouse. I think the approval means more. I think males seek it, but I think, like we talked about on the Facebook level, I think males seek it in a much more superficial way.
Yeah, I well, thanks. As a lady, I'll say thank you. And
you're
welcome. I also think, and this is one small sample set, I think, one of the reasons I named my book Approval Junkie and mm-hmm. shared my own stories is that I can like relentlessly seek approval from myself, which has turned out in my life to mostly be a good thing. Sometimes it's exhausting. Sometimes it has meant that I've put myself in situations where, like in my first marriage, where I was never going to get the approval I wanted, or, seeking approval from a number on a scale. Those are painful and possibly harmful situations. But in general, I'm always trying to prove something to myself. And I like that. I'm not ready to embrace myself and all my flaws. I still think that I can be better or faster or kinder or more patient.
One thing that I think is really interesting is that we kind of evolved in our careers in a similar way. We were both actors at one point. And talk about
yeah.
a never-ending quest for approval.
It's
casting
horrible,
directors,
isn't it?
Agents. Every time you go in on audition, it is just, it's a never-ending quest for this approval that a lot of times just never comes.
It never comes, and it's so arbitrary, right? I
right.
mean, for an approval junkie like myself, and you can tell me if you feel like you are one or have been one, mm-hmm. it is the perfect profession, right? Because you are constantly scratching that itch. It's almost like a lottery, too, when you're
yes.
an actor. Is this the time I'm going to hit? Because for the most part, it's really no reflection on you. It's what color hair they want that day. Or, if you remind the casting director of his ex-girlfriend, you may not get the part. And
sure.
I was always, for years, wanting to be chosen, as if someone else chooses me, whether it be my ex-husband or a casting director, if someone else chooses me, then I know I've checked the box. And for me, it was, I had been, like most young little approval junkies, I had been a straight-A student in
mm-hmm.
school. Seeking approval, I think, as a kid is very straightforward, right? We all
sure.
kids are just, you're supposed to behave, and you're not supposed to do drugs, and you're supposed to say please and thank you and make good grades.
Of course.
And I did that. And then once I got out of grad school, it was sort of like, oh, life doesn't continue to give you gold stars anymore
right.
unless you stay in academics forever. So how can I get them now? And that was what I did. I sought it from the world of acting. It sounds like you did too.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I moved into being a journalist and scripting myself, and perhaps even more fulfilling, interviewing other people and listening to their stories and helping them tell their stories, I found that I didn't need so much external approbation. Was that your experience too?
That's exactly what it was. And a lot of times I think if someone goes into a profession like acting where it's all about you, your personality, how you perform for that 3.5 minutes on some
yep.
reed in some loft somewhere on the Lower East Side, and you walk out, and if you didn't get the part...
Wait a second. Are you sure you weren't trying out for porn? That sounds so seedy. Some loft on the Lower East Side. I kind of love that. Well, you know, and that's your problem, Ed. It was only 3.5 minutes you were performing for.
That's exactly right. That's a whole other story for the next interview. See, this is we're leading up to what my book is going to be. Porn Approval Junkie by Ed Kalecki. But anyway, but the idea that you go in there and you're relentlessly, you're auditioning on Monday, on Wednesday, and two on Friday. And if you don't get any of them, if you are searching for only that type of approval, which is kind of superficial, and there's that word again, I would imagine that it creates so much self-doubt and it starts to damage one's self-esteem. And that's why it takes a certain person, even what we do now, we're still performing to a certain extent, but you're not out trying for a job 6 times a week. But it creates this level of approval that's never, ever, ever going to come.
Going to come or be enough.
Right.
Because once you get cast in one role, you want to be cast in the next.
In every role. The new book, Approval Junkie, Adventures in Caring Too Much, is available in bookstores, of course, on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It is quite a fun read. Faith Saley, thanks so much for joining us here on America Weekend.
Ed, thank you so much.
Thank you. Stay with us. More to come. I'm Ed Kalecki, and this is America Weekend from the Envision Radio Network.
America Weekend.
Where are they now with Ahmad Rashad?
This all-star first baseman won the 1980 National League batting title. He's best remembered for the error he made in the 1986 World Series, but few are aware of the comments he made earlier that day.
The nightmares are that you're going to let the winning run score on a ground ball through your legs. So, you know, those things happen.
Little roller up along first, behind the bag, it gets through Buckner!
So where is Bill Buckner now? Bill retired in 1990 and moved to Idaho, where he invested in real estate, even naming one of his housing subdivisions Fenway Park. In 2011, Bill managed in the Canadian American League, and he signed on as the hitting instructor for the Boise Hawks in the Class A Northwestern League in 2012. And when it comes to his famous error, Bill is looking to put it all behind him.
Hopefully it's Bill Buckner in the 86 World Series, but he was a pretty good player. Leave it at that.
Bill Buckner, pretty good player. I'm Ahmad Rashad.
Think Green. Harris with you. The results of the first ever national random sample survey of bankruptcy filers conducted by researchers at Cambridge Hospital and Harvard Medical School, Harvard Law School, and Ohio University show 60% of all bankruptcies in the United States are driven by medical bills. Since 2007, the share of bankruptcies from medical bills has continued to increase. Get this. Bankruptcies were actually designated as medical based on the stated reasons a person had for filing. And those with health insurance were underinsured, leaving them responsible for thousands in medical bills they simply couldn't pay. Nationally, about a fourth of all companies cancel insurance right away when an employee has a major illness, and the other 25% cancel insurance within a year, according to Natural News. And losing a job due to recession also can mean losing health insurance coverage.
Think Green with Harrison at GoHarrison.com.